kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Cole's going to be here a little later on in the show with the party cast. We have some other stuff we have to take care of before then. We're kicking things off a little differently this week. We've got our good buddy, Norg, joining us. George, how are you doing?
I'm fabulous. How are you doing, Joe?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm excited that you're here. I'm always happy when you're on the show.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to be here. I love it.
I know. I'm sad Cole couldn't make it for this one, but like I said, she'll be here later on in the show.
That's too bad. I love her voice. Oh, my goodness.
And we love your voice. That's why every episode of the show starts with you.
Oh, that's right, because no one else would sign up to do it.
Yeah. How's it feel to be our last chance?
The guy. The only choice. Out of one.
The last hope.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. I'm my only hope. You're the only one I could find. So just bloody show up and fix everything, please, and thank you. So, go ahead.
I was going to say, how have you been? It's been a little bit since you've been on.
That's true.
How's life treating you in this this crazy age?
In these troubled times. We're all in this together.
Yeah, we still got to make that commercial.
Oh, yeah, we do. Y'all, I've been thinking about that, too. I got to tune up the acoustic guitar for that one, because we got to do that one right. Do some slow arpeggios. In these troubled times, it's just a reminder that Joe Cam's Pancake House is still serving the wettest pancakes on the planet. Curbside pickup only. Ain't no thing. We'll wear a mask. We'll hand it to you with a claw. We'll even stand 20 feet away from you and extend it to your car. Just make sure you give us your credit card in advance. We got you. We got this. We're in this together. Wet pancakes for life.
Beautiful.
Oh, man. That's the gist of every commercial.
Guitar in these troubled times.
I know. Ding, 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 ding. Anyway.
In these troubled times, in these horrid, horrid times, we're still doing a podcast.
In these times of viruses and murder hornets, fucking murder hornets. Dude, I'm phobic of wasps as it is. And just knowing that less than an hour and a half away north of me by car are these murder hornets.
Really? I haven't even heard much about these murder hornets. What are they? What's going on here?
There's some kind of Asian hornet that is rumored to have been brought over to the United States because they're a delicacy. And their queens are like 2 inches long. The reason they're called murder hornets is because they'll find your average bee and they will wipe out an entire colony within a matter of hours and eat all the thoraxes of the bees and bring them back to their own colonies. So that's basically why they're called murder hornets. They will murder all of the bees, and they're absolutely vicious, and they are extremely aggressive. If you think regular hornets and wasps are aggressive, these dudes totally take the cake. I've heard the description of being stung by them is like having a steel rod jammed into whatever appendage you get stung with. So,
God damn.
Their stingers are not pleasant by any stretch, and they're really close to where I live.
Man,
I don't know how to function in a world where these kinds of things exist.
The whole world is just going to hell in a handbasket.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Like, I'm the weird thing, I'm actively trying to like watch my language a little bit anymore because my niece apparently found us on YouTube.
Oh, no.
Like, I got a message the other week that's just like, hi, Uncle Joey, it's Aubrey. I'm like, oh, no. I say bad things on this show.
How old is Aubrey?
She's young.
Oh, yeah. It kind of makes you change how you project yourself in a way, doesn't it?
Yeah. I'm the bad uncle who completely forgets how old she is. Like, in my mind, she's still 4.
Oh, man.
I think she's like 12.
Okay.
But in my mind, she's still like 6 years old and she's innocent. I'll watch her be like 10, 12, something like that. I don't know. I'm a terrible uncle.
Hey,
I forget everybody, how old I am sometimes.
That's a good thing. It keeps you ageless and forever young.
Forever young.
Forever young. Forever young.
Oh, George.
You got better Davis eyes.
Anyway.
Oh, George. I love having you on.
Love being on. Hey, we got a thing we gotta do, don't we?
We do. Should we get to it?
We should get to it. Do you want to do the special musical introduction first, or do you want to enter the game first?
Well, we could always, you know where, how I say things, right?
That's true.
Yeah. So
if you start out by saying that the name of the game and it's by, and then I hit the thing, then we can do it that way.
You want to
do it
that way? That'd be great. I'm going to leave Let's all do it of this that way. In. I'm going to leave
oh,
all
yeah, of
this
of course. In yes.
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh my God. It's perfect.
Yes. Yes. Let's do it. Oh, I'm so excited.
You ready?
I'm ready.
You ready?
I'm ready. I'm so ready. Ooh!
All right. First game to talk about tonight is called Level Head, developed and published by
Butterscotch Shenanigans. Shenanigans.
Released April 30th on Xbox One, Switch, and PC for $19.99. Build, play, share, and compete in Level Head, the platform maker. Create challenging levels with this deep intuitive systems of the level editor, then share those levels with the world and gain a following. George, I know you love your butterscotch shenanigans, as we all just heard. So tell us about Level Head.
I am such a fanboy for butterscotch shenanigans. There's ever since Crashlands, excuse me. Oh my gosh, they're gonna fire me, dude. Everything they touch turns to comedic gold, and they put amazing gameplay into it everywhere you look. So you can't possibly go wrong with this. Level Head, here we go. I have had a tremendous amount of fun playing around with this game. And for anybody who's not familiar with the way I review games, I have the good, the bad, and the ugly as far as categories go. So I'm going to start with the ugly straight out of the gate and just get it out of the way.
Before we get to that, did you want to quickly tell us what the game is, though?
Oh, well, at its base, the game is a 2D platformer, and you control a character that is tasked with the role of picking up a package and delivering it. So you could think of it in the same vein as this is the kind of thing where you pick up a thing and you have to get to the end of the level. It's not that simple, though, because it includes a whole bunch of switches and different things that get in your way and different types of terrain and backgrounds and other mechanics that are designed to nefariously stop you from getting the delivery package to the destination. The name of your character is GR18. It's a delivery robot. And your job is to pick up the package. Sometimes that package is at the very beginning of the level. Sometimes that package is near the end. And sometimes it's in the middle in various places. And what you end up doing is, in addition to trying to navigate around creatures and obstacles and things that will try to destroy you, no murder hornets, thank you very much. You can actually use this package as something to jump off of. Sometimes you can throw it at things. Sometimes you use it to block other things. And they do a really good job of weaving all of this into this amazing 2D platformer. Was that the kind of description you were looking for?
Absolutely. Because, by the way, did we mention this game is developed and published by
Butterscotch Shenanigans?
I want you to get your mileage out of that one.
Is this the first time you've ever had barbershop on your show?
I think so.
Oh, man. Today's a good day.
Yeah.
Four-part harmony in the house.
Yeah, I love it.
I do. With almost as much passion as I love butterscotch shenanigans. I mean, hey. Okay, so.
So, yeah, level head. Good, bad, ugly. Let's hear what you got to say.
Good, bad, ugly. Start with the ugly. Not a darn thing. No crashes, no glitches, no slowdowns, no nothing. I didn't have a single problem playing this game, period. Nothing awful happened. So, given some of the other PC games that have come out lately, the bar was low, and they completely pole vaulted over this thing. You know, this is like the first PC game I have reviewed for your show that didn't feel like it was still in beta, believe it or not. This thing has a sheen of completion to it that feels amazing. But that's more of the good category. Let's get the bad stuff out of the way. The slight unpleasant stuff. And these are all minor things too, because part of it is the fact that I am moderately inadequate when it comes to 2D platformers. I like playing them. I'm not like speedrunners guild, if that makes any sense, but I really enjoy playing these games. So one minor irritant, I guess we'll call it, is it gets kind of difficult when you're trying to manipulate all of the different types of terrain when building levels. As a disclaimer, I'm not a good level design person, so my experiences in trying to create levels were cursory at best. I really, really, really wanted to dive into actually making like a long play level, if for no other reason than to get to read all of the descriptions of all of the things that you can use, because all of them are amazing to read, and I encourage you to really dig in and just look at everything. Some of the mechanics when playing through some of the levels, either the ones in the tutorial or ones that were other user content, are just ridiculously challenging for average dorks like me. For people who are super accomplished at like 2D platformers and stuff, this isn't a problem. They eat, breathe, drink, sleep, and pour milk over the breakfast cereal of this kind of stuff. And I'm sure that my minor criticism of this is more of a casual gamer is falling on deaf ears, which is probably good, because I think that there's enough slightly casual content and enough super hardcore content that you can appeal to every genre of that. The only drawback I would say is that it's difficult to discern between the ones that are going to be super satisfying for people like me who are just really enjoying it, and the guys who need to play levels that look like, do you remember Super Mario, asshole?
Yes.
Okay. I have seen level head levels previewed that look just like that. And people play through those levels and they beat them, and more power to them. I could never.
Yeah, me neither.
Just leaving that there.
Congrats to those who were able.
Exactly. I don't have that level of twitchiness. I have Tourette's, but I twitch in different ways. These people are just otherworldly when it comes to game playing. Hey, self-abuse is the sincerest kind. All right, moving on. The good. There's so much good. Oh my gosh. The game runs smoother than silk. There's not a single slowdown ever when I was going through this. No matter how much stuff was on the screen, it just kept running smoothly and beautifully and gorgeously. The scenery itself is gorgeous. There are so many different types of layering you can get, different scenery types, different landscape types, and they all look beautiful. The plot is thin. I would say, but you don't really need a thick plot for this game. You're a delivery robot. You have to bring the package over to where it's supposed to go. End of line. And the fun part is figuring out how to do it in really challenging levels. There are options to play through many, 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 many training levels. You could just play all the training levels and have a complete 2D platformer right there, and it would be great. But then you have the ladder of user-created content. And then on top of that, you have like the tower of specially curated top stuff, which is, there's so much good leveling to play through out there. For so long as the community continues to back this game up, it will never run out of content, and it will always be fun to play. I can foresee, like, some dude is going to make an action RPG out of one of these things and create this huge, massive level that takes you, like, an hour just to get through. They're going to build Metroid out of this thing, and it's going to be amazing. And I hope I get a chance to play it. It's a maker's dream. Now, to be fair, there's already a really good maker game out there right now that it happens to be exclusive to the Switch, which is in Mario Maker and Mario Maker 2. This game is also released on the Switch, so I don't know how much of an impact that's going to have on sales, but this game is no slouch, and Mario Maker is good. This game is good. And for people who are willing to dive into it, there is so much cool content that can be made, and I can't wait to see how it pans out. There is a ton of hidden stuff that is locked into the unique brand of humor that is brought to bear by Butterscotch Shenanigans. There's just no other way to say it. You really need to dig and watch and look. Like, I can never remember the name of the Rosie Riveter poster of the gal with the scarf doing the muscle thing from the World War II posters. But the Crashlands dude has a poster doing that pose in the main screen. Like, just off in the corner, you notice it once you finally see it, but you kind of have to look to find it. And that's just scratching the surface of all of the cool stuff that's in there. This game is already great, and it has so much potential to be even greater as more and more people create things. And assuming it does well, my understanding is that the Butterscotch Shenanigans guys have more, I think, like expansion stuff or other levels that they're planning on making for it. So I really hope this game does good, because I'm dying to see where it goes and what else it does. I also think, I can't confirm because I'm not entirely sure of the specifics, but I think that the levels are cross-compatible, meaning that if you have it on PC and you have it on Switch, you can go back and forth with the same account.
Yes.
So that's a cool feature. Yeah, that's a cool feature, being able to go back and forth with that.
Yeah, I have it logged on Xbox, and I know I went to the website and I was able to log in on the website, and it linked it to my Levelhead creator account, a little ID that you could share with other people. So it's nice. Cool that you could link that stuff up and that all the levels are cross compatible.
Oh man. Yeah, they have built a huge thing with this. And I really hope this does well for them, because they have so much to offer in not just this game, but other games that I know that they're going to be able to make. And oh, I can't wait to see what's next, both with this and what's in the future for them.
Well, I'm going to add another item to your good list, and that is the fact that it is also available as part of Xbox Game Pass.
Oh,
yes. So if you are on the fence and you don't have $20 to drop on this game, but you have Game Pass, you can just give it a try and play it as much as you want as part of Game Pass.
That's amazing. Holy moly.
Yeah. Dude, Game Pass is life, I'm telling you.
Amen to that.
Absolutely. So, overall, $20 on Levelhead. What is your verdict?
Buy it. Buy it. Buy it. Buy it. Buy it on more than one platform if you can. I'm just saying. But no, seriously, absolutely. For $20, it's a steal. It's an absolute steal for how much content you get out of this.
I agree. I love these level makers because it's infinite gameplay.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, people aren't going to stop making levels. And if they do, there's already thousands of levels out there to play.
And there I'm sure half so of them I could never many beat. Levels. It's and each day is bringing more and more and more and more. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm going to log into it probably again tomorrow night and just take a look. And the entire ladder is going to look different because yep. there's all kinds of brand new upvoted stuff. And it's going to be a wonderful experience to try something new. It's a new in that. In the user curated stuff, it's a new experience every day, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to love it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. This is definitely a major, major offering from the guys at
Butterscotch Shenanigans.
And I can't wait to see what's next. Milking it for everything it's worth.
Oh, man. George, I always love having you on the show. Always a pleasure. We got to move on. We have more games to talk about. Do you have any final words before we move on?
No final words. It was a great opportunity to get to play through this. Thanks for the chance to do it. It was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to playing more of it.
You mean this game that was developed and published by
Butterscotch Shenanigans. Shenanigans.
The very same.
All right, moving on. We've got Tim Ekibis joining us. Tim, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing well. Doing all right.
How's things?
Good, you know. just hanging in there. Just keeping it on the DL. Hanging around the house, as always.
Just chilling.
Yeah.
Sounds
fun.
Chilling,
just chilling, playing games, taking care of a kid. That is what I am up to.
You watching your wrestling?
As such as I can. Yeah, I did watch.
What do you think of Becky?
Well, good. I mean, that's great. You know, she's having a baby. That's wonderful. I mean, the better part of the whole thing is that it makes Asuka the champion.
I mean,
that's the best part of the whole thing. And I didn't really care for the Money in the Bank match. It had like a couple of good moments, but mostly like a lot of the bits felt very like first draft to me.
Yeah.
And the cameos were pretty forced. And it was just like, okay, guys.
That doink fine. One was pretty bad.
That was, it was just, well, yeah.
Like, it didn't even look like doink.
No, because there's a reason why. Just like, yeah, just that whole thing and like Stephanie's weird, like, cutaway when she obviously wasn't in the same room, which made me feel like I was, like, having a flashback to X-Strike Studios when we would do that. Like, oh, we forgot this shot. Well, let's quickly grab it against this wall and just pretend like it's the reverse angle of this room and just, like... yeah, no.
No. You're sharing shooting techniques with WWE. How's that feel?
Yeah, but, yeah, it's wonderful for Becky. You know, I guess it's kind of a bummer that she doesn't get to lose on her way out for, you know, a while. I'm sure she'll be back. Bummer that Shayna seems to be like DOA on the main roster at this point.
I know. Maybe Shayna and Asuka are going to go at it. That's the big matchup that we've never seen.
Yeah. Didn't they do? They did. No, they bait and switched it on a Raw. They said they were going to do it, but then they didn't do it. They did like Shayna versus Kairi instead.
Yeah.
So yeah, one will think Asuka will have some challengers and defend the belt a bit here in the no fans era, where she's been doing great. I feel like
Asuka's been standing out really well in the no fan era,
just because she gets to be crazy and energetic and weird.
Hey, it works.
Yeah, heck yeah.
It works. And her reaction on Monday at the news, it just felt so genuine and real. It makes me wonder if it was, in fact, genuine and real.
It makes you wonder. But more fun wrestling news in the last week was last week's Dynamite, and that freaking street fight was, which was ridiculous.
Oh my lord.
That was so goddamn fun. Oh, I love that. It was wonderful.
Yeah, that was pretty beautiful. Any wrestling match that involves running somebody over with a golf cart gets bonus points for me.
Yep, it was great.
Oh, man, good stuff. Anyway, we got some games to talk about. Should we get to those?
We should get to the games.
All right, next game to talk about tonight is called Spirit of the North, developed by Infuse Studio, published by Merge Games, released May 7th on Switch and Steam for $24.99. Plays an extraordinary red fox whose story becomes entwined with the guardian of the Northern Lights, a female spirit fox. As you journey over the mountains and under red-stained skies, you'll discover more about your companion and a land left in ruin. Tim, tell us about Spirit of the North.
Spirit of the North. You
spirit
play
of Dale
as
North.
The spirit of Dale in the North, a foxy adventure game. Hey, so yeah, you are this game. I apologize in advance if like I'm a bit too snarky about this game. I don't know what it was about it that just made me like pop off in a snark fest, but just like so, it's like the game. It is kind of a little adventure puzzly deal, not unlike it reminded me a lot of Journey, that classic game where you are. It doesn't have like the whole companionship aspect thing to it, but it did feel a little bit like that when just kind of like you're in this, you know, kind of big, expansive, like empty-ish. Other than, you know, natural environment, and you are exploring your way through it as this red fox. And there's like it presents a kind of something in the distance at the beginning of the game, like this red tornado, like spirally looking thing off in the distance that you infer is your goal. And it's there on the horizon as you traverse over and under this mountain to get there. And the game will relay its story to you. Not through, I mean, foxes don't talk in this game or in real life that I know of. like there will be, you know, murals on the wall with like lore and story bits and pieces on them for you to find. And just kind of like that unspoken, like, you know, everything that the game wants to tell you is being told in the environment more or less. Just that kind of a feel, like a relaxing, like the game is not too hard in general. Just relaxing, chill, exploration, peaceful, game. So yeah, you control a fox. The fox is a little bit janky looking, like he doesn't move super smoothly. Like I feel like you move like the wolf movement in like Okami 15 years ago was smoother than in this game. Like when you're turning, like he just kind of like turns at a 90 degree angle. He doesn't like pivot. It doesn't look like a natural turn. And there's just like weird moments when you're jumping on things. Like I just had a little, not always quite clear whether I was landing on something wrong and just kind of slipping off, or whether I was supposed to be even traversing a particular piece of the environment or not. Like there was a moment when I was trying to like shimmy myself off a ledge to fall down onto a ledge below it. And I ended up just like, this is my fox was just literally standing on thin air and not falling. I was just kind of like, okay, just having some snickeringness at that.
Maybe I'm not supposed to go this way.
Well, no, I was, it was just still hanging me onto the ledge. And, you know, eventually I, you know, popped off and went down and landed where I wanted and was supposed to be. Maybe there was another way to get there, but that's how I chose to get there.
Fox has that Mega Man ledge grip.
Even better. Like, at least Mega Man has, like, a toe hanging on there. But, yeah, so it's doesn't look like... The game looks fine. Like, it looks good. I'm not going to say that it looks bad, but there's definitely, like, some things in the animation that kind of keep it from, you know, that just like break you from like the full immersion, just being like, oh yeah, video game, the fox moves a little weird. you know, you get wet and you get out of the water and he shakes himself off every time. It's just like, oh yeah, nice little detail. But then he's doing it like every time. It's just like, eh, okay, all right. Okay. So the way, your fox gets hurt, and you spend a really long time limping around, through this cave, like half dead, until, finally you link up with the spirit of the North. You link up with the spirit fox, who kind of like heals your person. And then from that point forward in the game, you are manifest. I guess the spirit is manifesting itself within you to help you solve puzzles and traverse environments, which like you can tell when you have a spirit ability, cause there'll be these markings like on your fox's body. And that gives you the ability to interact with certain things, gives you certain abilities to interact with the environment. And when you don't have spirit power, you walk up and you bark at flowers in order to get it. That's how it goes. You just walk up, you bark at the flowers, you'll get like your spirit racing stripe on, and then you can go, you know, interact with a tablet, which will move some rocks or... you know, move a rock or something like that, move something. So like, okay, well now I can get up to this place. Now I got to get up here. Now I got to figure out like, well, how do I bark at some flowers to get, you know, spirit ability to move up here to interact with this thing. And then you get other abilities like a super bark, a super bark, which I had a lot of trouble with on the first usage. Cause I think I needed to be standing in a particular place or something like that. And that was again, another little point of just kind of the game's like, immersion breaking a little bit for me. It's a nice chill game. Like it did not set my world on fire. Like the music, like the whole, you know, the presentation is pleasant on the eyes. The music is pleasant upon the ears. It was not too severe on the brain. Like the puzzles were not like killers or anything like that. It's a nice experience that you will get from beginning to end of it. It's just like I said, it didn't really, you know, grab me too much. It's kind of on the short side for a $25 game. Like it's easy under 5 hours. So it may not perhaps have the best cost to time ratio, if that is a factor for you. But you know, all in all, there isn't a lot of games that I think bark up that journey tree. So, if you're looking for an experience, you keep having me on here. If you're looking for, you know, that type of experience, that might scratch that itch, this might be something for you.
All right. Then overall, your verdict for $25?
I'm going to give it a try. I think it might be like a little bit pricey for kind of the just, a little bit on the short side, a little bit on the, you know, the okay side. Like it wasn't a barn burner, but it's a decent solid game, to keep an eye on. Maybe wait for a sale. I always hate to say that because developers, you know, they need your money, but
yeah,
you know, it was also like, it's been out on PS4 and some other things. And it was like just on sale like last week for $15. And I was like, yeah, it's probably a good price for it.
There you go. All right. Well, you got one other game to talk about. That is called Beats of Fury, developed by Bubblehead Games, published by Gamera Game, released April 22nd on Steam Early Access for $6.99. Beats of Fury is a mix of rhythm game and bullet hell top-down shooter. Be ready to take the role of DJ and smash your fingers playing music while shooting every single beat on the screen. Tim, what is Beats of Fury?
Well, I certainly wouldn't call it a bullet hell game, or a top-down shooter. It is definitely a rhythm game, though. That is for sure. I will not contest that statement. So, Beats Fury, this is early access, so mind that. This is not the completed version of the game. So this is not like an official review, as it were, but...
Yeah, consider this more a preview.
More of a preview, to whet your appetite. So Beats of Fury, it's pretty straightforward at the moment. It only has like 10, 12 songs in it right now. I do appreciate that there is a mix of styles in it. It has electronic stuff and just, metal in there. Could use some ska, Ska's always good. Never enough ska. Get some ska in there. So the way the kind of the, and it has your, like, you know, easy, medium, hard, and asshole difficulty levels, like kind of like your basic things that you expect out of a rhythm game. So the way that the game plays is you have like an overhead perspective. Your character is in the middle of the screen, and they emit a cone, and enemies will come in like on the beat from any side of the screen, like top down, left, right. You have full 360 degree direction over said cone, so you have to position said cone over the incoming beat, and then you tap the button at the appropriate time, and the game will show you like it like literally puts like a circle, or I think it, like a transparency of the enemy on where it is that you need to hit the beat. It might benefit the game in general just to have like a solid circle at a certain distance around your character, so you just kind of know where to hit it rather than it coming up every time for each individual thing. I don't know, maybe just a thought. But either way, but that said, that is helpful when things are coming from the top or bottom, when you don't have quite as much real estate on that side of your character. So that definitely helps to know, like, okay, an A button press is coming in, or a B button press. I mostly played this game on a controller. It is playable on a mouse and keyboard. I thought that, you know, those are not my comfort zones for playing rhythm games. So I mostly played on a controller. It is, like most things on the PC, it is colored, and the buttons are, you know, your Xbox controller button colors. Which was weird at first, because I was using I have an 8-bit do Bluetooth Super Nintendo controller, which is what I usually play PC games with now, which is a real humdinger when I have to like kind of wrap my head around the fact that the buttons it's telling me are not the buttons that are on the controller, but usually I can figure that out. But in this game, and again, early access, like it just, that controller would not fucking work right. It worked okay for the first level, but then the second level, like, the cone just stopped, like, it's moving. It was, like, lagging and being really janky-like, and just, like, it was literally completely unplayable. So I had to go dig out a wired 360 controller to plug in there, and that thing was fine. Like, that totally controlled fine. So just, I mean, that is probably the recommended controller for this game, is something 360, but just kind of like, oh, using something wireless over Bluetooth, I don't know. It was a bit jank at the moment.
Yeah, I know the Steam page explicitly mentions Xbox controller, mouse and keyboard, or just keyboard for the multiple ways to play. So I'm not sure if PlayStation controllers will work as well. I'm sure they'll work, but there might be some compatibility issues. So maybe if you have an Xbox controller, stick with one of those.
Yeah, but I mean, that bottom line, that worked fine. I guess at the end of the day. So yeah, the enemies will fly in you know, patterns on the beat, and you just tap the button to zap them, and you want to hit them on the beat, and that's good stuff. There will be, you know, moments in pretty, it seems to come up a lot more in the metal levels, where you'll have to, there will be like a wave of enemies in a line, and you need to hold down the button and then swoosh the cone over them, so it'll be like sliding down on the guitar, something like that. Though again, it's like sometimes, like especially when those waves of enemies are coming in with individual like solo beats that you need to tap on, it can be kind of tough sometimes to see what is coming in first, because they'll just like bunch up and there isn't like a lot of distance around them. So I had some trouble with that. Oh my god, holy shit, that's right. When you start up the game, by default, there's a lot of visual effects set up, like the camera pulling out and the screen rotating and all these lights and shit like that. I turned that all off because it gave me a massive headache. Like, it gave me motion sickness in a rhythm game. Like, it just pulled out, started spinning, and I was just like, holy crap, no thank you. Like, and even after I played a level, I was like, okay, I can play this game without throwing up. I went and turned a little bit of it back on, and I could not do it. So watch out for the motion sickness in this game.
Damn, that is a good warning for me, because I struggle with that as well.
Yeah, you might want to turn that stuff off right away if you have motion sickness issues. I never would have expected that, but it's like the game was trying to hypnotize me. So yeah, it does have leaderboards in place at the moment. But yeah, it's a pretty straight. I definitely was not getting like a bullet hell feel out of it. It just felt like straightforward rhythm game. The things fly in on a line. Yes, they're shaped like little aliens or whatever, but they might as well just, you know, you're just tapping on buttons. I've definitely seen stuff not terribly unlike this before. Like, it was sort of like a little bit like, Gitaru Man, where you have to like rotate the cone around the screen on those rails. Whoa, catfight.
Yeah, that happens a lot when you're on.
I don't know, something special about you.
And now they're all just going off. They're
yeah. So it seems fine at the moment, like, but as just a rhythm game, I definitely wasn't getting the bullet hell feel out of it. But you know, it just released in early access, only 12 songs in at the moment. It seems okay for now. Definitely have to see like what more they do with it as it comes along.
Yeah, well, they are saying that the price will increase as features are added. So at the $6.99 price tag right now, is it worth getting in on the ground floor?
I don't know. Like, I don't know how well it's going to come together. You might want to keep an eye. I definitely don't feel as enthusiastic about this as I did about Spin Rhythm, which is also in early access. And what we talked about back in the fall. It is also more expensive, but that game just felt better, had like more polish on it. And that game still seems a lot cooler as far as early access rhythm games go. But I mean, if you're really into rhythm games, then yeah, sure, you might like $7 is probably worth tossing at it. If you are expecting like some kind of a top down bullet hell itch to be scratched, I don't believe that it will. So, meh. I guess it's also a try it at the moment. Like,
it's worth keeping an eye on.
Yeah, most early access games, I feel like, are at least worth keeping an eye on to see how they develop. But maybe you might want to wait for like a couple more updates on this one just to see kind of what direction it takes.
Sounds good. All right. Well, Tim, we're going to let you get going. We got a party cast to take care of. So do you have any final words before we get to that?
Oh, I do not. Sorry. Sorry.
All right, and moving on, finally, it is party cast time. Cole is here, Pernell is here, Chris is here. How's everyone doing?
We made it another couple of days. Hasn't quite been a week since I've done this shit. Made it another couple of days.
A couple of days. It's been about a week since I last did this shit. It was a good time. You know, I'm grooving.
Lucky fuckers only happen to do this once a week. What the fuck is that?
Hey, life is suffering in other ways for us. Don't you worry.
Thanks. That makes me feel great.
You know we love you, Joe.
You asshole.
We like you to a moderately acceptable degree.
That works.
I can dig it.
What's going on with everyone? How's everyone's week?
Chris has been silent. He didn't even answer the original question. He's like,
What question?
Too many questions, Joe.
I was talking a lot until the record button got hit, and then I like was
got stage fright.
Stage fright, yeah.
You know, I'm very shy on the microphone.
when it was time to get on the wheels of steel, he didn't know what to do. But how's everyone's week? You said it's been good, honestly. I've been having my moments of stir crazy lately. It's getting stranger for me. But overall, I can't complain. The one thing I find hysterical is that so when this whole thing kicked off, they were talking about, hey, everybody needs to work from home. So they were supposed to set everybody up for it, but my bosses totally fell asleep at the darn switch, didn't set me up for crap. So I was going into work every day when I didn't have to. But now I don't want to work from home. I want to stay there. I'm okay with the risk, whatever, because it means I can see people walking around being human. And I'm like, I need to be around. And now all of a sudden they're like, hey, Pernell, we were about to set it up. And I was like, don't you freaking dare. Don't you dare. I don't even talk to my coworkers. I just go to a room and hide out. But just knowing that they're around and I hear voices in other rooms, I'm like, yes, that's the stuff.
That's I hear voices addiction. In other rooms, too.
They make medicine for that.
Like, is that you, Pickle? Feed me, Joe! Oh, shit. Like, that's the problem. But like, yeah, it's like, I don't want to work from home now. It's like something I always wanted, and now I had the opportunity to get. It's like, I don't want that shit. I want to come in every day. But aside from that, the La Mulana challenge, which I was in the off record. So I was doing La Mulana playthrough where the intent was to get through the entire game on hard difficulty, fighting all the bosses without using special weapons, which is a lot harder than it sounds. It's hard. And I did it. But the achievement didn't come up. They said I was 88% through, which is some bullshit. Firm was like, maybe you accidentally use a special. I was like, how in the hell am I going to accidentally do anything when this has been the entire focus of my play? Like, you're not going to just magically not notice something that's been the entire purpose of your play. Like, you're going to slip up on it.
No.
But, so I was like, yeah, I'll be fucking kidding. This is redonk. This is ridiculous. But I wrote to Nipponichi. I'm hoping they hear back from them, which is very rare for me. I never write about this stuff, but I'm like, I want answers. But I still had fun playing it, though, and I've been talking to other friends as they've been playing through the game, so it's been like a nice little conversation piece, working through a game with people, which is a rarity for me nowadays, because I'll be that guy, and I wonder if you guys agree with this. I feel like a lot of what makes gaming fun is the social aspect, not so much in multiplayer, though that's great too, but just being able to talk about what you do. Like, it's a conversation. He's like, hey man, what's your experience like with this game? Man, I fought this boss, kicked the shit out of me.
You talk know, me about too. Playing video games, that I don't,
you
who would want to talk about playing video games?
I don't know, some whack jobs, some cuckoo labanzas love doing that kind of crazy shit. What is the deal with those people?
Weirdos.
what a bunch of sods. But yeah, you know, I do enjoy it very much, so it's a good time. And honestly, that's pretty much my week. Aside from that, hasn't been too momentous. I don't know if I mentioned that on the show, but I finally got my darn stimulus check. It went right into the bank. Yeah. And did nothing, like, just like I wanted it to do, because I'm glad to have it, but I'm also grateful that I didn't need it, because I'm still able to collect some funds. But
you know what I did with my stimulus money? I fucking ordered Assassin's Creed Valhalla Collector's Edition on Xbox One.
Oh, nice. Well,
I found one in stock.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited. I got my order in. My streak stands. I will be getting this year's Collector Edition of Assassin's Creed.
That's the funniest way to phrase it, though. I will be getting this year's edition. Like, every year! Assassin's Creed 2021. That's just start numbering them by the year.
Assassin's Creed 2022.
But, like, I was just like, I thought about buying a micro SD card with that money, but I'm like, don't do it. Don't do it. Like, there's a number of things that I want that I haven't bought. Because I'm like, got to be smart with my funds. Don't buy it, Purnell. You know you want it, but don't do it. And now I'm like,
here's some money. 1 terabyte card, Purnell. Do it.
But this is there. You know?
Do it.
And it'd be just my damn luck. I buy it. It shows up. It was like, you're going to see an article on Kotaku. You won't believe what just happened. The 1 terabyte cards, long $500, are now like 100. Get it now, like, you sons of bitches. Like, I'm waiting. I wish.
To be fair.
That's another reason I want you to buy
it. And it goes on sale within so many days, most places will adjust the price.
I don't know. With this day and age, with that, with the stores being weird about even like remote return policies, I almost picture them being like, well, we can't technically get it as a return, even if we are changing the price for you.
Depends on where you get it at, because David got me a Cricket at Walmart, and then they immediately went on sale. Huh?
A single Cricket?
It's a cutting machine called a Cricket. C-R-I-C-U-T.
What, you insects?
I thought you were talking about the phones.
No, no. A die cutting machine. Like, you load up a program, you put a silhouette into the program, you load your paper or vinyl or fabric or whatever into the machine, and it cuts it for you. It's what crafty people use it. Anyway, but like a Cricut machine is like $250-$260 bucks normal price, and they went on sale after he bought mine. They went on sale for $179.
Oh,
literally like 3 days later. And so I called Walmart and I was like, I just bought this bitch and it's on sale and this sucks. And they're like, just bring your receipt in and we'll refund you the money.
Well, that's good.
And so he just took in the receipt and they're like, okay, here's the cash back. And he's like, oh, we'll just put that on my debit card because I'm not allowed to take cash home. So
in that case, who? Maybe.
My wife plays the division. She's scared of money. So.
So what you're saying is not only can I do society a decent service by getting the thing discounted after I get screwed over on the purchase, but then I can refund it.
Yes.
And get the money back.
They even refunded the difference in my, because he bought an extended warranty for it, and those are based on the price. And they even refunded the difference in the extended warranty.
Oh.
Yeah.
That works.
Just something to think about. I mean, I don't know if places like Best Buy and stuff will do that, but Walmart fucking does. And Amazon does too, within 7 days. If you call them, if you buy something and then it's cheaper, they'll refund the difference.
Not all the time. It happened to us and they're like, oh, I'm sorry, there's nothing we could do. It was literally the same day that it shipped. It went down in price and they wouldn't refund us anything.
Was it sold by Amazon or was it another? Really?
Yep.
Usually if it's sold by Amazon, they're pretty good about it. But there are times. They'll get you.
Amazon has been getting worse and worse over the years.
Amazon has been fucking...
I mean, for good reason, but it's a good reason in a bad way. But it's because they got them. Now they got the business. It's like people know who they are. Everyone's addicted to their policies and their services. Now we can fuck them.
But I would figure it doesn't hurt to at least call and ask. If you get something and it goes on sale, then fuck it. Be like, hey, I'd like to do a price adjustment. The worst they can do is tell you no.
Yeah. The worst they can do is cut you.
Well, they might, but that would be illegal.
I mean, it's Amazon. I'm sure he'll make it work.
I wanted to get a price adjustment. Ah! stabbed me! what the hell?
Bitch, you got adjusted now, didn't you?
Mister, you got explaining to do.
Did you stab me?
How's that for a price adjustment? Take your ass home.
It hurts so bad. I'm bleeding.
That's actually something. Now I'm laughing my ass off at the thought of that. What the hell, man? What's going on? That's right. Does it hurt? There's your damn price adjustment. Take your ass home. Get out of the damn store. It's like, what is this? But see, now I might have to do it. Because at this point, like I said, we're on the 400 gig, and I'm constantly like, every time I get a new game, I got to rotate something off. And even though, I admit you can do that thing where you can use the archive games, but I only feel comfortable doing that. And the other alternative I've heard people say is you can just like swap memory cards up. But then I've heard people say that confuses the Switch over time. So you don't even want to do that. Like, it's something you can do, but you don't necessarily want to do it.
I wouldn't be shocked. I know when I swapped memory cards on a Vita, it was a pain in the ass to do anything.
Yeah, it was. I had to rebuild the entire freaking database every time.
All the bubbles were moved around. All your folders were fucked up.
Not on my watch. Not a fan. So it's like, at this point, it's like, just hold off a little longer. Maybe I can just get the 1 terabyte card, smile about it or some shit, and then move on with my life. And just have my, because I mean, a part of me wants to say, there's no way I'm going to fill up a whole that entire card. But then again, I didn't think I'd fill a 400 gig card either.
So. You'll fill it.
Friggin' Switch with its switchable
set. Of course you'll fill it.
It's just too damn good.
1 terabyte. There's no way I'm going to fill 1 terabyte. Dude, you're going to fucking fill that 1 terabyte so quick.
Switch. We were like, you're never going to fill 1 gigabyte.
On the Switch?
Like on MP3 players and stuff, whatever they had 20 years ago.
Rupert says that they have 600 games on 4 different memory cards, so it looks like you could swap cards no problem.
How often does Rupert swap the cards around? Like, is it a constant thing? And I'm also going to assume that, if I remember reading correctly, it'll keep all the games that they're actually stored on the system, as far as like the fact that they exist on your system's memory. But if the memory card doesn't have the game on it, Or the memory card that's in there doesn't have that game on. It'll just show up with the cloud image on there, right? Basically, you need to download it again.
Probably.
Okay. Not the fact that it is a consideration, because like maybe I can try it. I mean, I have a 256 gig card sitting here doing nothing for me. So, I mean...
Give it a go. What's the worst that could happen? You lose everything. Whatever.
Yeah. I was about to say, like, do we need to answer that? Because there's an answer for that.
Wouldn't be the first time.
God, don't get me started. No, I've lost everything on the Vita before doing that.
Boo-hoo, I got to re-download a couple hundred games. Big deal. Have you ever had a re-download 2,700 Rock Band songs?
Yes, that's why I'm still not done. That's why I don't have all my songs, because I gave up. I was like, fuck it, it ain't worth it. I'm done. Like, another Ben Camaro song, I quit. Done. Oh my God, Bang Damn Camaro. I don't even, but I miss my Rock. Lord.
Anyway, we got games to talk about. We got to move on. We got to get to some work. Before we talk about those, Crawlers and Brawlers, Purnell, have you played this lately?
I did dabble in it a little bit after we recently got an email from the dev studio saying that they listened to our episode and acknowledged the complaints we had about the font. For those who don't remember, because it was a couple weeks ago, one of the issues that was had by, I believe, Joe and I was that the font was ridiculously tiny and the coloring, there was like a weird color clash that made it hard to read as a combination of those two things.
Yeah.
While they didn't address the coloring of the letters, they did increase the size of the font and the UI. So what ends up happening is that even though I have the weirdness with the color being a problem, due to the fact the letters are so much larger now, it's negligible. The color is a more of a negligible thing. I can still absolutely read the text now. I did a quest level, got to the end, and had some funny dialogue, and I can read the funny dialogue. It was great. So, honestly, that was a very, personally, very important, necessary fix they had to make there, and it makes the game a lot more playable, because you can read the darn item. You can read the item stats better now. You can read the character dialogue better now. Shop inventory. All that stuff. It's an RPG. It's a freaking action RPG. You need to be able to read stuff.
Yeah.
So, and they did address that, and I appreciate that they actually went through the trouble of not only fixing it, but asking for more details on what needed to be fixed, then fixing it, and then notifying us of the fact that they actually did it.
Mm-hmm. Major props to any studio that is listening to feedback and addressing complaints and issues with the game, you know, as quickly as they did.
Yeah, because you could honestly, man, they could have just been like, so tell us about this condition while I can't read it. The text is too small. Oh, the text is too small. You can't read. It's too freaking bad.
Oh, my God. What's he doing with that knife?
Exactly.
What are you going to do? Stab me?
You really did develop Crawlers and Brawlers because fuck. Now I'm brawling. I was brawling. Now I'm crawling.
Oh, my Lord. All right. Well, we got some games to talk about. Next game to talk about tonight is called Fury Unleashed, developed and published by Awesome Game Studio, released May 8th on Xbox One for $19.99. Fear Unleashed is a combo-driven roguelite action platformer. Each kill you make increases your combo, hit certain thresholds, and your damage resistance and healing powers will kick in. It's a game you can even beat in one ultimate combo. Are you up to the task? Purnell, were you up to the task?
Hell no, but that doesn't mean the game is bad. It just means I suck. Oh, that doesn't even mean I suck. It just means I got more time. So, Fury Unleashed is a game that can best be described as combining. I was trying to think of one, but I don't want to. I can't think of one in particular. So, just any roguelike game that popped up nowadays. That's a popular trend of game releases. Binding of Isaac. But then, there we go. Thank you. It's like taking Binding of Isaac and meshing it with Contra and calling it fun. Because, my God, this is a fun game. But it was also really freaking brutal, too. So, also a dash of Comic Zone, because the entire game plays out on a series of comic book pages.
Yeah, can we take a second to address how fucking awesome this game looks?
It looks fantastic. Like, when I booted it up, like, and saw the comic book aesthetic, I was like, wow, I haven't seen anything like this done since Comic Zone. And while this is not one-to-one the Comic Zone style, it doesn't have to be because this is their game. Comic Zone was his own game. But it still does a great job of giving you that I'm playing in a comic book feel. Like every time you start a zone of a level. So for the record, the runs take place across comic books and each chapter is a page of the comic book. When you start the first panel of the comic, in the upper corner, it'll actually list like chapter one, the name of the chapter, and it'll like story written and drawn by such and such. And it's like, that's a nice little touch there. It's just a page header on the panel. I love it. And every once in a while, when you're moving around gunning guys down, I'll get into the gunning in a second, you'll come across events, and some of those events will even give you more of a comic book feel where like all the color will get wiped out and you're fighting on like a colorless page and the enemies are rushing in. As you eventually kill everybody, the color just flushes back onto the page. It's like crazy stuff like that. So the actual game itself, you are basically a main character trying to get to the end of a series of comic books. There's a total of four comics in the game. But as you play through them, the game sets up where you start out with a loadout where it'll be like one of four guns and one of four melee weapons. You start out with only two, one melee weapon and one gun. But as you play in the game, you can unlock a few other ones based on fulfilling in-game requirements. Like there's a little more quest that'll pop up. But you choose those things to start out, and then you kind of jump onto the first page. And each page is randomly generated because, again, roguelike. And you are tasked with getting typically to the lower right corner of the page to escape. As you run around, you are fighting a variety of different enemies, typically based around the comic book that you are playing in. And as you have a couple of options at your disposal. You can use your gun attack, which you fire by holding the right thumbstick in the direction you want to fire. Each gun has a number of bullets in it. When it runs out, it'll reload. You don't run out of bullets, though. You just have reload times. You have a melee attack. Swing the weapon. Hit dudes that are close to you. You have a stomp. So if you're in the air above a guy, you can press down. He'll just like dash to the ground and like smash dudes. Honestly, I love doing that. and you also have like a dash attack, not attack, but just like a dash maneuver. So you can like dash, like an air dash. You can evade stuff and evade enemies with it. And you can also just sprint across the ground and make covered ground very quickly. Now, as you kill enemies, you'll acquire ink. There's three types of ink in the game. There is black ink, which will give you experience points at the end of each run. There's gold ink, which is the currency in the game. As you run around the different environments, you'll come across the occasional event where you can spend gold ink to get like health regen. You can purchase new guns from vendors and just various events that might require you to spend ink to get it. There's also red ink. Red ink is your health, but the only way you can get red ink is by killing enemies and pulling off a combo of five or more. And then any enemy you kill after that has a chance of dropping health for you, which means you are heavily incentivized to maintain a combo. Keep that bad boy rolling. So you're running around, you're killing dudes, and eventually you get your ass handed to you and you die. What happens? Well, game's over. You are thrown back to the beginning of the game, but all of the black ink you acquired will roll into an experience point system. And as you level up, you'll get skill points that can be applied to a skill tree, which you can use to level up in certain areas, like higher, more hit points. Or let's say, for example, you can increase the combo time I was telling you about. You can actually, I don't know, get basic chances to do more critical damage. And then one of my favorite things you can upgrade is fast travel. So I mentioned earlier how you have to maneuver around comic book pages that are randomly generated. Let's say, for example, you move across the top page, then decide you want to go. Oh, no, of course, no. You're going across the top page, you get to the upper right corner. It's a dead end. You've done everything you could possibly do up there. Your combo is high, but it's ticking down fast. And if you run all the way back, your combo is just going to die. What do? Well, you go back to the main menu or to the map of the comic page. Activate fast travel, move back to the last place you wanted to travel to. You'll warp right there. You can jump right down and start shooting dudes again. Doesn't kill your combo or nothing. It's very time convenient, and it's very convenient for maintaining your combo, which you'll probably have to do more often than not. But you can use the fast travel upgrade on the skills menu to get more fast travel uses per page, because you're limited up until you upgrade it. As you play around the different pages, there are a variety of mini bosses you can come across. If you beat them, they're basically just really hard enemies in the pages. And if you beat them, you will gain access to a decent treasure trove reward. And then, of course, there's the main bosses. There's three main bosses per area that you can come across at the end of the book, at the end of the comic. So you'll have to fight them, too, in order to progress to the next comic zone. Comic zone! So it's this game turned out to be a great time for me. I enjoy stumbling across new events as I play through the game. One particular one, which I actually screened about while we were recording today, is I was running around, and there's the image that appears when you come across a comic panel event, where if you walk up to it and press the button, you'll get the dialogue saying, hey, make a deal with the devil, or whatever. But this particular time, I pressed it, the screen went gray, and the event panel changed to a giant monster with arms coming out of the panel page and started chasing me around, throwing crap at me, and it kicked my ass. So I did not expect that to happen. It was the first time it happened to me in my runs. I flipped out and died. But I actually enjoyed that experience of death, too. So it was great. This game is not easy. I'm just going to say it right now. Between your Y power, which can be like time stopping or bullet time or whatever. Between that, your grenade button, your dash button, your melee weapon, and your gun button, and your stomp, there's a lot to juggle here. In addition to that, the game is just straight up hard anyway. You're going to die a lot. You're going to get your ass handed to you, and that's okay. It's just worth noting that you're going to come into this having to juggle all these options. And honestly, when I played on a number of cases, there were times I just forgot about certain things in my arsenal and just didn't use it. And that's okay. I probably would have done better if I did use everything, but you're not required to. It just means you won't do as well. So it's a challenging game. It's going to break your balls, but it's a lot of fun to get your balls broken in this manner, non-sexually. And it's a good time. It's a good time. I honestly recommend it. And this is a game that I feel like if I had seen it on the store without like a video running or something, I might not have been as expected to jump on it. But having experienced it myself, I think it's a great time. It's one of those games where it could be considered short, but again, that shortness is based on, you know, how good you are at games like this. Because if you're not good at them, you're going to get your ass beat. Blazing Chrome is a short game, but I don't know many people that have beaten Blazing Chrome, so it's a pretty long game for them. Why are we just talking about you? Like, I have trouble with this game. You beat Blazing Chrome. Shit, I can't beat Blazing Chrome. See that? But
that help.
Oh, see, there it is. Yeah, help. See, help helps. I need that damn help.
You need that second player.
Yeah, man.
But well, like, not one of my friends. One of my friends is actually speedrunning it now. So,
God, I'm so jealous. I have a buddy who's doing that now too. He's trying to convince me to do a two player with him. I can show you how to play. I'm like, when two people are on the screen at the same time, I get freaked out and bullets spraying everywhere. But but like Blazing Chrome is like five or six stages total. Very short game, but learning it and mastering it, doing well at it, it takes a lot of time. Much more time than it takes just to play through the stages themselves. This game is similar to that. Between leveling up your dudes and actually playing through the game, learning the ropes, seeing all the different bosses that exist on each page, you're going to spend time on here. More time than the actual number of levels leads you to believe. So I think it's a good time. I think it's worth the money. And I think it's also a decent amount of time that will get put into it that you'll feel satisfied with your experience with it.
So plenty of time for the value, and you get what you put into it.
I believe so, yes.
Cool. So overall verdict, $20. What do you say?
Unleash the fury on your wallet. Bye.
All right, next game to talk about is called Fledgling Heroes, developed and published by Subtle Boom. Released May 7th on the Switch for $9.99. Leap from the nest into a fun-filled adventure. Meet cute feathered friends, each with their own wondrous story to tell as they dodge dastardly pirate lizards, dash through frozen forests, dive under sunken temples, and flap their way from fledglings to fully fledged heroes. Chris, tell us about Fledgling Heroes.
Okay, well, it's always funny to me when the description is a better review than I can give. It's just, you know, so carefully worded.
And the pun, yes. The lizards.
Oh, no, yeah, they're in there. There's pirate lizards. Yeah. And, yeah, later on there's, Conquista Caimans or something like that. And I was like, why couldn't you call them Croquistadors? They look more like crocodiles anyway. Anyways, whatever. They got long, thin mustaches. It's pretty great. And those, like, stupid metal hats. Yes, so Fledgling Heroes is a, so it's, you know, they, I want to call it like an auto flapper. It's an auto runner, but you don't run. Well, a couple of them do, but like, it's basically, you start the stage as any, depending on the stage, there's a set bird out of six that'll play. There's two, basically there's three worlds and there's two birds per world. And in each world, the levels are divided in half, and half of them you play as one bird and half you play as another bird. And, so depending on your bird, you start the stage, and it's just automatically going, like, you know, you're flying, you've got the momentum, or swimming or running, and you basically have a whole bunch of goals to get through in the stage to get through it. I mean, obviously if you get to the end, then you've won the stage and you can move on, but, eventually you're going to have stages that are locked away behind coins, and you have to pick up coins within the stages in order to, proceed any further. And of course those are gained through any number of ways. Like sometimes there are straight up items in the stages that you have to pick up while you're going. Sometimes there's like defeat four lizards, and you know, you do it by using timing basically to bop them on the head as you're flapping through. And you know, sometimes there's animals in cages that you free. Sometimes it's you know, it's all, it, you know, there's a whole grocery list of stuff per stage as to what you're supposed to do. And the cool thing about this game is that, you know, obviously it's designed to be, you know, all the stages are designed to be played more than once, because all of the all the things that you can do in a stage, you can't really do all at once, because, you know, they're branching paths, so you can't 100% the game on a, you know, on a single pass. But that's all right, because each stage is very short. They're about half a minute long, maybe a full minute. And then some of them are endless, and you just go as far as you can, still picking up items whenever you can. And, you know, like, the cool thing is that once you do something, like, say, defeat four lizards, once you defeat those four lizards, you don't have to complete the stage at that point. That thing is done. So you don't have to worry about doing it every time if you bump into something and have to restart. So they're very, very merciful about that. In fact, this game does seem to be aimed towards the younger crowd, although that doesn't necessarily make it easy. It just makes it like really accessible and clearly spoken as to what's needed. And this is actually one of two games that I am reviewing today that just so happened to be entirely written in rhyming couplets.
Really?
Yeah. I found a weird link between two of the games I'm reviewing today.
Interesting.
Yeah, so the whole thing's written out in rhyme. It's extremely colorful. It's beautiful, in fact. Like, everything's hand-drawn and adorable. You know, you got these bright, colorful parrots. Your underwater bird in the first stage is Penny the Penguin. Oh, and the macaw, like, parrot that you start off with, his name is Biscuit. Which I love. I love when animals are named after food for no reason. Biscuit the parrot.
Yeah, I have plenty, you know, of history with naming cats after.
Oh, food. Yeah. Yeah, I knew you'd appreciate that one. And then in the third world, you get a toucan named Toto, which is pretty great. And that's actually your heavy character, which is funny. One of two diving type birds. And what was I saying? Oh, yes. So you've got a variety of like different level types and different birds that go through the stages. You know, like I said, graphics are beautiful. Music's pretty good. Reminds me a lot of Reverie, actually, which is a game that I reviewed quite highly and subsequently purchased a lot. But yeah, so like the other things about the game, well, of course, like I said, you know, it's going through the stages, getting all the collectibles and getting enough collectibles to eventually make your way over to the portal where you get a key and you can unlock the other one of the other stages. You can actually do them in any order, too, which is kind of nice. You know, if you want to unlock the third world instead of the second world, you can do that if you so desire. There's another thing in it where you can unlock a lab in every stage. And in those, you actually get to access a level creator. And you can create your own fledgling hero's level.
Oh.
And yeah. And actually, you pick up like basically pieces that you can put in your levels. So like in the first stage where you have Croquistadors, or sorry, Conquista Caimans or whatever. Caimanstadors. If you pick up a special item, like a blueprint item in that stage, then now you can put them in your own custom stages. So you don't get like the whole, you don't get the whole palette until, you know, you've completed the game, really. But, you know, you can always make stages out of stuff you've already seen, which is pretty good. And it's very, very easy. It's just drag and drop. Like, you just put stuff wherever, and the game's like, whatever, I don't care. You, like, tap on a chest, and like, what do you want in this chest? And you just pick from a list, and yeah, this is an extremely easy level creator. And you can also customize all of your birds. You can change the colors of their feathers and things like that, which is pretty nice. Each bird, of course. And you also rescue like all these different palette swap versions of these birds while you're going through their levels, too. So it's just so much in this game. It's about 90 levels. And, you know, the final one of which kind of acts as a boss level. You just got kind of a boss present. In the first stage, of course, it's a dragon, that you have, that's like on screen. And if it, you know, gets over you, then it kills you. If it gets under you, then you just bounce off its head until you run into something, which is kind of the way the game goes, is that anything that you bump into from overhead, that is to say you come down on it, you tend to win. But anything that you, that comes down on you, that is to say, if anything touches the top of your character, like that pretty much is instant death. But, you know, not to worry because lives are infinite and such. You just start over until you're done. And, yeah, so I found this game to be really well made. It's a great auto runner, even though it's, like I said, it's more of an auto flapper. And yeah, that's, it's a real good one.
Nice. So $10, your verdict?
Yeah, $10. Clearly the care has gone into this game to make it what it is. The amount of content that you get, plus 6 different types of playable characters that all, you know, play differently. There's a lot of game here. And again, you can do your own level creation, which you can actually share with codes. So sweet. You can actually, yeah, you can share your stages with other people. There's also a co-op version. Again, I think that's aimed more towards the little kids because there's not a whole lot a second player can really do, but it does put a second player in the stage. And you can compete against each other or play cooperatively. So, yeah, definitely a buy it. It's a great little game.
Cool. All right, yeah. Next game to talk about is called Sin Slayers Enhanced Edition, developed by Goon Swarm, published by Black Tower. I can't talk. Released May 8th on Xbox One for $19.99. Sin Slayers is an RPG with roguelike elements set in a dark fantasy world where your choices determine how challenging the fights and enemies will be. Pernell, tell us about Sin Slayers.
Sin Slayers is a pretty cool little game, actually. So the idea behind it, well, it's typical roguelike premise in this regard, where a bunch of heroes are trapped inside of a church building. They cannot get out unless they somehow manage to defeat monsters that are representative of the 7 deadly sins out in the world, inhabiting the environment near the church, so that the monster horde can be depowered and they can go home. Whole lot of fighting taking place when they could just fight, use that energy to fight their way out, but instead they're fighting to win. It makes no sense. But thankfully, the game itself actually makes plenty of sense in a good way. So the main hub for the game itself takes place inside of the church itself. While you're in the church, you're allowed to use characters that you found and discovered to form a party of three different members, which you will then take out into the world at large to do battle. The world consists of multiple environments, or rather multiple locations, that have various environments and one monster that rules over them that you're looking for. When you enter the environment, the map itself is randomly generated, and there's usually a base goal that you have in mind, usually around finding the boss or a minion related to said boss and then killing them. But as you are running around in these environments, there are also other goals that you might discover too in the form of quests that upon being discovered, you can, you know, embark on them and hopefully get a reward out of it. I'll talk about a little bit more of those in a few. But anyway, so when you spawn on the map, you start out next to a fountain. The fountain can be used to heal your characters if you drink from it. But then once you drink from it, it's tapped for a few turns. What is a turn? Well, as you look down, there are typically the area you start out, you can actually visually see. It's colored in and you know it's there. But every other square is black and white, so you don't know what's out there. And as you move around on the map by using the thumbstick and clicking on an area, you'll actually go out and expose the world itself, thus coloring the world in, and you'll move around the map and so forth. As you move around different locations, you reveal each individual square. Sometimes you'll come across a series of different events. You'll come across treasure chests, which you need to be unlocked with keys. You'll come across wandering merchants that you can use money that you've acquired to essentially, I don't know, make purchases from. But all in all, the more likely thing you're going to come across is jerkbag monster faces. And when you do come across those guys, a battle will ensue. What is a battle like in this game? Well, simply put, units on the left, monsters on the right, as it typically goes with these kinds of games. However, no, that's not how it plays like a normal game too, but I'll still explain it. I'm sorry, it's like, here's the... No, it's the same. So, your characters have armor bars, hit point bars. Armor bars are based off of the actual armor that's equipped, that they're equipped with, and it is what takes damage prior to the actual character losing hit points. So, if an enemy has an armor rating of 40, monster does damage of 30, armor rating goes down, your hit points are totally cool. But once the armor's tapped out, hit points start trickling down. And every character's turn is listed at the top of the screen in the order of speed that they've got. And when it's that character's turn, you can use the bumper buttons to scroll between their attacks. They all have a basic attack, but then they have other attacks that can be used as long as something called rage is accrued to cast it. That's this game's form of magic points, basically. Depending on if you take damage or certain attacks that you use, you'll accrue rage, which will allow you to do these other moves. Your goal, of course, is to drain the enemy's armor and then their health as well. Knock them down, you kill them. All monsters have their own particular weaknesses, though, and the weaknesses are something that you'll learn either through trial and error, or as you fight more of the same monster, you'll reveal more about their information in the game's bestiary, which then you can look at and determine what their weaknesses are, and then use it to your advantage. Characters start with two tiers. Two tiers. So you have the basic attack and then their first attack, which is usually rage powered. As you acquire gems, like experience gems, you can unlock additional tiers of attacks for these characters. So let's say the first tier is your basic attack. You have one thing there. Second tier could be another attack, which will be like two or three attacks listed together. And you have to choose the one that you feel is the most effective to have in that slot. So when you go into actual battle, you can only have one attack in that slot of the three or two that they make available for you. So you have to choose. But on the positive, outside of battle, you can always say, no, I want to use this one now, and just switch between them. So you're not locked in anything except for during battle proper. Sometimes you'll come across passive abilities as you unlock tiers in their abilities. And then when you do that, it's the same thing. You choose one passive ability for battle. But then unlike the other normal ones, you don't have to select it to do it. It just passively functions, hence the word. So it ends up working out that way. And honestly, I came away enjoying my time playing this game and experiencing it. Like I feel like I say this a lot, which I'm actually happy about. I like that I say this a lot, but I'm fine with that, which is that I did not expect enjoying this like I did. I was disappointed in the sense that I felt like you only have a party of three that you can use. You get other characters, but you have to swap out one of your guys in order to put one of the new guys in. And quite frankly, I like the three that they started me with. I didn't give a crap about most of the other guys I was coming across. Like, I don't care about that guy. I have a priestess. She priests. She heals. I have a warrior. He wars very well. And a huntress, man, she can hunt. Like, they all fulfill roles in my team now. They're maxed out with their attacks. They're still leveling up. I don't feel the need to use the other dudes. No. Don't care. So it's like, it's not really a bad thing about the game itself so much as it just makes me wish I could have a party of four or five or have more incentive to switch the characters around because I don't want to. I straight up don't want to. But I do like that. I like playing the game as it is, though, nonetheless. Another major mechanic that I need to describe about the game, actually there's probably two more I need to describe about the game, is the dungeon exploration has an extra mechanic to it called the send meter. The send meter is a gauge at the top of the screen where as you explore, you will occasionally come across, let's call them events, usually involving searching corpses or digging holes or opening chests that don't belong to you, stuff like that. And every time you fulfill an action that is of the unsavory, your sin gauge will go up. If you don't do one such action, your sin gauge will go down. And every time the sin gauge breaks a certain threshold on the sinometer, the monsters on the field will get stronger. So it's a bit of a tug of war between, okay, do I want to keep searching for treasure and hope for the best, knowing that my sin gauge is going to increase, or do I want to just scale it back a bit and let it just kind of cool down? And quite frankly, it's funny that they make you do that because, to be honest, you're not always guaranteed shit either. So you might open a chest, get nothing out of it. Dig a hole, or desecrate a grave, nothing's in the grave. In fact, you might desecrate the grave and have monsters jump you. Hey, all in a great day's work for a sinner. But essentially, there's a lot of like just decisions to be made there in regards to, is this the right time to loot this grave or whatnot? It's not complicated. It's just decisions nonetheless. But also, in addition to that, each area that you go to, whatever monster rules that environment, they will also provide a sort of a negative penalty to you while you explore that map. So it might be a map where sin accrues more in a more heavily or a heavier fashion. So like now all of a sudden sin is like you get like double the sin for fulfilling negative actions or something like that. And you just have to keep that in mind as you're exploring that monster's domain. Honestly, the game itself is not complicated. The music is great. It's like rock music in all the battle sequences. I don't know what they were thinking with that choice, but I'm glad they made that choice because it gets me pumped for battles. Rock music in combat is almost an all. That should always be the case. If I ever play a game that's an RPG and the music from combat is like a violin and it's very sombering and quiet, I'm like, that's not getting me pumped for battle. What is this mess? Save this for a dramatic fight. When I'm just fighting skirmishes, I need to get pumped. This game does that. All rock music all the time for combat. But I honestly found myself enjoying it. It's got a very satisfying loop of go out into the field, explore a little bit, find some treasure, hopefully fulfill some quests, go back to church, change your party out, go to the blacksmith and upgrade some gear, which is done by way of crafting new equipment using stuff you found out in the field. And honestly, wash, rinse, repeat until you beat all the sin lords. It's a fun little loop. It's not too complicated. There's a narrative here, but the narrative pops in here and there typically when you defeat a sin lord. And aside from that, it's just like, just fulfill the missions that are being given to you. Yeah. But I like the visual style. I like the music style. I like playing the game.
Well, then for $20, your verdict?
I honestly think it is. I would call it a buy it in that regard. It's a good time.
Awesome.
Prime.
All right, next game to talk about is called Cooking Simulator, developed by Big Cheese Studio and Wastelands Interactive. I get a kick out of a cooking game being developed by Wastelands Interactive. Published by Forever Entertainment, released May 14th on the Switch for $19.99. Experience the world of restaurant cooking in a highly polished, realistic kitchen. Use ovens, gas stands, pots, pans, bowls, and plates, everything you need. Prepare dozens of lifelike ingredients from vegetables through fish to steaks and poultry to cook over 60 real dishes or anything you like. Chris, tell us about Cooking Simulator.
Okay, Cooking Simulator. So, back in 2011, there was a video game that came out called The Elder Scrolls V: Skyrim. And this game was...
I've heard of it.
Well, let me tell you. One of the features of the game is that, should you choose, the game was played in first-person mode, where you would see through the eyes of the character as you traverse the lands of Skyrim. Well, ever since then, a lot of games have been doing this whole first-person thing, and Cooking Simulator is one of those games. I mentioned Skyrim because one of the things that's the most notorious about Skyrim is that you can click on something or, push the button on something when you're looking at it, and it will pick it up, and then you can put it back down somewhere else. But instead of it being like you pick it up with your hands and then place it down carefully, it just kind of floats it in front of your face. And you can try and approximate a place that you want to put it. And if you're lucky, you can kind of drop it in the right spot, but you'll never be quite precise about it. For some reason, that one tiny little thing that people have always complained about with Skyrim is the basis for an entire video game called Cooking Simulator. You walk around a damn kitchen all by yourself that, there's no other people present in the entire game, and you pick up things and place them down in like that way where you're just kind of staring at it telekinetically rather than actually using your hands. And the thing is, I'm no professional, but I do a little bit of cooking. You kind of do actually need your hands. So... right off the bat, I can say that that's the kind of thing that we're largely going to be dealing with here for interface. That's the most concise way I can put it. And then the thing that's going to affect the rating the most is that, unlike Skyrim, there's no way to invert the y-axis in this game.
Oh, no.
I heard that gasp. That was a good gasp. So, yeah, you do have to look up and down. You do. You have to go through shelves. Not only do you have to do that, you have to pinpoint accuracy, look at a single clove of garlic, and then, levitate it over to a cutting board, pick up a knife, and levitate it over to that thing, interact with the cutting board, and then set it up with the shoulder buttons to do, this sort of, tilt until the knife is in the right place to cut it exactly in half or whatever, and then push the button to slice it and just hope that you got everything right, despite the fact that you had to do it without inverted y-axis.
Is there a button for 911?
There's so much more than that. There is a phone, and you can I'll get to that in a minute. So the game starts, and the cool thing about this game is that everything has an optional tutorial that you can either skip or learn from, and I do recommend you do the tutorial. There's even a whole separate section in the main menu for cooking classes where you basically get to learn the mechanics of the game, although what ended up happening is I took the cutting class because, by the time I got through the tutorial and made my first fish dish, because they start you off with fish and tomatoes, I was like, it was all perfect, except that my cutting technique on the lemons wasn't so good because of exactly what I just described, is that you really don't have a lot of control over it. And I'll get to that too in just a second. So I go over to the... to the tutorial section, and I take the cooking class for how to cut, and a chef pops up. It's just a picture of a chef, by the way. It's not a person that's in front of me. It's just a portrait of a kind of Wolfgang Puck sort of looking dude. A little bit Jacques Pepin, a little bit. You can tell I watched these shows when I was a kid. Tells you to grab a tomato, and there's three tomatoes sitting over there, and So I grabbed the tomato and then I grabbed the knife and, then he's like, and now, just cut the tomato. Like, he doesn't actually really tell you what you have to do or what's a good technique. It just basically just, you know, tells you to do it and then you can just keep doing it. Well, you can do it once per lesson. But the funny thing is that after I grabbed my knife, I was like, well, okay, I'm hungry now, so I'm gonna go get some Cheez-Its. And, and when I went to get some Cheez-Its, I came back and he was actually mad at me and he was saying things like, we're not going to leave here until you cut that tomato into four pieces. Oh, he had like a red background and his face was mad. I was like, this is great.
So you want to know what else is great? Awesome Prime just dropped 50 biddies in chat.
Oh, he heard his name.
Drop it! Bits.
So, thank you, Prime. Always good. Thank you. Good to see you.
Those looks like animated Valentine's candies.
Animated hearts.
Okay. Yeah. So, oh, nice. My cutting technique didn't get any better because basically I chopped the tomato into I just shaved a tiny bit off of the last piece and that was considered a fourth piece. And then the message was just like, well, you'll have to cut it more evenly than that to get a better score. Anyways, but bye. And it kicked me back into the kitchen. And my next round, like, I just kept starting new games and stuff like that because I wanted to figure out how the game worked mechanically. I didn't do this immediately. I actually gave it a really fair try. But then the second time I started all over again, I skipped the prep time the first time, and I'll get back to that in just a second. This time, I actually used my prep time to take one of my gas canisters, which is, you know, for, I guess it's a propane tank that's meant to be used for, I don't know, something, I guess dispensing gas into a cooker or something like that. Anyway, it was just there, so I set it on top of the stove and turned on all four burners and went to go prep my meal. By the time I came back...
safe.
Naturally, it exploded and ruined my stove. So
naturally,
I got an order for salmon and potatoes. So I was like, "Well, I better clean up this stove." So I grabbed a sponge and I threw it in the microwave for a few minutes.
And then, Jesus, sounds like chicken, like cooking calamity simulator.
Yeah, exactly right. And then, yeah, so it was like, well, take your, you know, fish, put it in a pan, and then put the pan in the oven and set the timer for a minute and a half. So, of course, I got my cooking pan. I put the fish on top of the pan, and then I set the timer for a minute and a half and put the whole thing in the oven. And so I cooked my fish and my timer. When it came out, I had chopped up several lemons. And took the four most attractive pieces, my sprig, you know, seasoned it all up and put my sprigs of parsley on there and threw it out there and I got 5 stars. Nice. So all's well that ends well. Yeah. That was actually the trout and lemon, now that I think about it, rather than the salmon and potatoes. I hope the customer didn't notice. So that kind of lets you know that this is a simulator game in the style that simulator games are now, where you can both... You could do a really good job, even though the interface is kind of awkward. And it actually does kind of pull you in to like do some good stuff. But then if you just want to be off the wall and completely stupid, you can actually do that. And while you will suffer some consequences, like for instance, buying a new stove or getting the current stove repaired, which by the way, I love that after the stove gets exploded, like the door hangs on for just a minute and then just kind of plops down onto the ground. But yeah, like, so you can like do all kinds of things, like anything that you can pick up, you can actually throw, and it has like this strength meter so that you can throw it quite far. And that's only there to goof around. That's not going to help you in cooking.
No, not at all.
Exactly. Yeah, but I mean, you can make a game out of it. You can try and get your potatoes into the pot of boiling water from across the room. And sometimes it'll actually work. So it's like really fun like that. And, you know, there's this whole collection, if you look at it on YouTube and look at Cooking Simulator, there's both people who take it extremely seriously, and they're like, here's how to make the best 5-star dishes ever made. And then there's people who are just like, you know, YouTubers who just goof around in it, and both are equally impressive. So I quite enjoyed that aspect of it. Now, for the I'm saying this, but all these videos are based on the PC version, which moves really well. I do have some reservations about the Switch version, which is, one, it moves at a much slower frame rate than every video I've seen of the other versions of Cooking Simulator. It's kind of chuggy, and it does not take much. It took me putting 3 lemons on a cutting board and trying to cut them all at once, which, by the way, doesn't work, to completely wreck the game's frame rate. Like,
wow.
And when you're just moving around, even when the intro, like, walking around motion is happening, it just kind of moves awkwardly. And again, the controls are weird because you're not using the mouse interface to do anything. You're just you know, you're having to use like the shoulder buttons to tilt things just so, and you know, you're having to use the sticks to like point at stuff that really, you know, it happened so many times that I was like, I just want that tomato. And I would like try to move the cursor onto it, and the cursor would like, I'd barely touch the cursor and it would move just past the tomato. And then I would push up and it would move past the tomato and then back down. It would go, you know, it wouldn't find the soft spot. So they didn't do anything like to help controller users. And there's no touch interface. I checked on that too. By the way, Fledgling Heroes, totally touchscreen game as well, but whatever. I'm past that review now. I tried to touch interface it. There is no touch interface. There's no like assistance where it can kind of lock on to something so that you can find it a little better. It just highlights it once you're there. But, you know, these are, if, you know, that's, there's no real way around like a lot of that stuff. If you've got a console, all I would say is that I really would have liked, yeah, some kind of locking on system where it kind of like, if you get close enough to an object, it pulls it the rest of the way so that you can be like, yes, clearly I'm looking at that knife, not 1.5 inches left of that knife. No. You know, and of course, inverting the Y axis. And, but, yeah, you know, having said, I had plenty of hours of, you know, of fun with this one. And what I like about this one as well, and this is going to be the best part, is that if you, you know, of course, like I said, the customers, their orders come in and they display on the screen and, you know, you're kind of timed. What I love about the mode where, you know, you're working a real day is that, well, this game doesn't follow like the laws of physics really. So if you prep like 10 salmon fillets like exactly the way they want them, so that when the time comes that the order comes up, you can just throw them on the pan. Like, you know, you don't have to worry about cross contamination, temperature like concerns, like things that would actually really bother a real chef. If something falls on the floor, just pick it back up and put it in the pan, you know? This game absolutely adheres to the 5-second rule.
Nice.
But yeah, like while you've got the few minutes of prep time, you can be doing that. And I actually really like that you can anticipate an order rather than having to react to every order that comes in, especially since they're all timed. You know, you lose stars if your dish goes over time. Like my trout and lemon. Awesome Prime,
dirt don't hurt.
Dirt don't hurt, yeah. Well, there's no dirt in this game. Nothing gets dirty unless it's by your own damn hands that are invisible. But yeah, like, you know, I was 2 minutes late on my trout with lemon because I had microwaved the sponge and exploded the oven. But so that took my time. Even though my taste score was 5 out of 5, my timing score went down to like 2.5 or something like that. So, you know, it's, you could still win. And of course, it has a whole RPG system where you gain chef points every time you successfully make a dish, and you can dump that into skill points and like all this other cool stuff. It's a great simulator for that. And like I said, the best part is that if you don't want to deal with any of that, there's a sandbox mode where you just run into the kitchen and do whatever you please forever with infinite money.
Nice.
And like everything available to you. You can invent dishes. You can look on your computer at unlocked dishes that you can like practice on. If you want to practice your, you know, lemon cutting abilities or your potato juggling abilities, you can, you just have infinite resources to do that. So, at the very least, you know, I really wish this game was a little tighter on the frame rate, you know, a little faster, because the Switch can handle it. The Switch can handle Skyrim, for goodness sakes. And that, you know, they were a little more cognizant of those of us who use controllers. But every other aspect of this game is like just absolute A++. It's really a good game that draws you in. And oh, and you can throw your phone in the microwave if you want to as well.
Oh,
I just wanted to throw that in. Yeah, And funny enough, I thought that there was no soundtrack to the game. It turns out there's a little radio and you have to turn it on manually.
Oh, there you go.
It's actually kind of funny.
All right. Well, $20 on Cooking Simulator. What's your verdict?
This one, I have to, like, as a game, absolutely worth it. But do you want the Switch version? Really just depends on, do you have a computer that's pretty good at running 3D games? In which case, you got to get this on Steam or something, because it's clearly meant for the PC crowd. You watch watch some like speedrun videos of people, or like people doing those videos of like making perfect dishes and stuff, and they're using, you know, the computer and stuff. Like, there's such precision work that I don't think they quite ported it in a way that you can replicate that on the Switch. However, if the Switch is your only system, this is a very fun game that will draw you in, and it's very good. Like I said, it's had some issues with porting, and for that reason, I would say the Switch version is kind of a try it.
Makes sense.
Just because, yeah, as long as the controls don't intimidate you and you're not bothered by anything else I've mentioned, this is a great game that you should really definitely try. And especially, like I said, sandbox mode, I mean, play all day. So,
just for the love of God, let us invert Y.
Yes, please, everybody. Please let us invert Y.
All right, next game to talk about is called Reed 2, developed by PX Link, published by Rattlake Games, released May 5th on PS4 and Vita, 6th on Xbox One, 8th on the Switch for $4.99. Reed awakens to the memories of the old supercomputer. Reed failed. The reboot failed, and now the digital world is once again breaking down. Before the old supercomputer malfunctioned, it gave Reed backup files that must be delivered to the developer. With the virtual world now doomed, can you get to the developer? Purnell, tell us about Reed 2.
This will be really quick compared to my other two reviews, so let's go down this road. Reed 2 is a very straightforward platformer, not quite Massacre. It's like a nice toss-up between Layback and Massacre, so just like slightly challenging, where the goal for every level in the game is to get the little white cat man from the entrance to the room to the exit of the room after you acquire all the floating cubes that exist within inside said room. Of course, to get to that point, you have to dodge arrows and running chicken things and spikes and top of spikes on top of spikes and navigating a variety of hazards. You can jump and you can double jump. Actually, now I'm wondering if I can even double jump. I've been playing so many damn platformers, but I feel you can double jump.
You can double jump.
Thank you. I play a lot of freaking platformers.
I discovered what I'm here for. Fuck yeah.
Oh, stop it, Cole. You belong. You saw what happened last week when you were gone. It was chaos.
Fuck makes you think I watched this show.
Oh, damn.
She has a point.
That is true. I can't talk. But so basically, you can double jump and you can rock, and that's all you can do. There are no, this isn't one of those games where you get a bunch of abilities and crazy stuff. It is a very straightforward platformer. The main draw, however, is fulfilling said platforming obligations and getting to the end of the actual game proper. There are secrets you can locate in the form of like hidden rooms, usually heralded by seeing like a tetramino hitting off the side of the map and then figure out how to make your way to it. And that's kind of enjoyable to do, because honestly, if you're already playing the game, you may as well be trying to go for all the secret rooms too. But admittedly, I know it sounds like, as I'm hearing, it's like, well, it seems like you like the game very much. No, I think the game is fine. I've enjoyed playing it. I like platformers. I enjoy the aspect of it. It's just that it really isn't a lot to talk about. It's just a matter of, this is what you do, and this is an enjoyable thing to do. And I feel as though the answer to that is yes, because it's not punishing. If you die, they respawn you immediately at the entrance of the room. No muss, no fuss. There's nothing that you can possibly lose in your progress by dying. It's just repeat until you succeed, which is fine. The levels do ramp up in difficulty, but however, given the fact that they give you that easy restart without real loss or consequence, it just means it's a matter of persistence and getting through the levels, which should not be a real issue for the player to perform. I enjoyed my time with the game, but maybe Cole could invite or provide a little bit more extra. She's like, what am I here for? This is what you're here for. is there any, what are your thoughts on this? Anything I might be leaving out? Do you think it's and you have a different opinion on if it's enjoyable or not.
So you're pretty much on par with it being a simple game. I would say, though, that I would argue that it is more difficult than you're making it out to be, especially as you get to the higher levels. Like, levels 40 through 50 made me want to break my controller. it gets tough. The level design is really well done, though, and I don't think that most of the time I thought my deaths were fair. There were a few odd times where I would have glitches where the character Reed would just move without me even having my hand on the controller. And so, like, I'd be sitting there trying to watch a pattern of movement of obstacles. For example, if there are blades coming in and out of the walls, then you need to, like, pick up that pattern before you start, you know, climbing up the platforms that are going to dissolve under your feet. I would be sitting there watching that, and then, like, the cat would just walk into a blade. Be like, I wasn't even touching a button. I don't know what happened.
I wonder if you're developing stick drift on your controller.
I don't think so, because I haven't noticed it in any other game I've played.
The cat walked
into none. And it was just like, it wasn't a case of it would just go and walk endlessly. It would be a set amount. It would just kind of go.
Weird.
So, like, if there wasn't an obstacle in the way, it would just stop at some point. And it wasn't even very far, but it would be far enough. Because the levels are so compact, it would be far enough to fuck you a lot of times. My only other complaint with Reed 2, and I don't recall having this complaint with the first game, but there's a visual lighting effect where there's, like, flickering torches in the background, and there's a flare that will go across the screen. The more lighting there is, the more difficult it can be to even see the obstacles. The flares are so pronounced in Reed 2 compared to, and like I said, I don't remember them being an issue at all in the first game.
Yeah.
But in this one, they were problematic enough that there were times where I would die and not even be able to see what the obstacle that killed me was because there's a flare in front of it. So it would take quite a bit of trial and error to get through something because you couldn't even see what was killing you. With the exception of that, though, I had a great time with the game. It's an easy completion for Rattalaika, but it's not the easiest completion. Like, Reed and Reed 2 both take at least a little bit of skill. I realized when I was, like, on level 48 that I had all the achievements but one. So I'm not exactly sure where the line was. I want to say it was somewhere around 24 or 25 that you can actually get all the achievements by. Because I kept going on without realizing that the one achievement I was missing was obtainable in level 7. And I was just going on because I was having a good time.
Yeah.
Which says a lot. I wanted to see the end. I wanted to know if you meet the developer. like, do you make it? Does it actually do any good? Because fuck, I beat the first game and thought I saved the damn computer. And then I start this one up and it's like, no, just kidding. Everything got JK. Fucked anyway. Yeah. Since Pernell
is just virus ridden.
Yeah. Since Pernell didn't seem to quite either explain it or get it. Your character, Reed, if you haven't played the first game, it's explained in this one as well. Reed is a cat, but he's actually like an antivirus program, if you will. He manifests in the system as a cat, but his purpose is to help clean and save a failing computer system. So everything takes place inside of a simulated computer system. But it doesn't have that computer look. There's no like circuitry or anything. It kind of looks like a temple.
Yeah.
It's a unique take on everything because it's, like I said, you wouldn't realize that it's all taking place inside a computer system if you weren't paying attention and actually knew that was the whole point. But I had a great time with it. I liked Reed, so I wasn't disappointed by Reed 2. I think as far as Rattalakas go, these two series are probably some of their more like flagship platformers. They're genuinely good, even easy achievements aside.
Yeah. Well, then $5 on it. What's your verdict?
Buy it. It's not even a fuck it. Why not? It's good. It's buy it.
Cool. Brunel, you agree?
Very much so. I enjoy my time with Reed, and I would recommend to buy it as well.
Cool beans. All right. One final game to talk about tonight is called Thy Sword, developed by Game Phase, published by Rattalaika Games, released May 12th on PS4 and Vita, 13th on Xbox One, 15th on the Switch for $9.99. Thy Sword is a retro-inspired hack-and-slash roguelike with procedural-generated levels. Pick from different hero types like the Barbarian and Valkyrie to break down the tyranny of the Dark Overlord. Chris, tell us about Thy Sword.
I like that they're saying characters such as the only two characters you can pick.
That's the not true.
And, do you unlock some?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can unlock. I unlocked the rogue and I think it was a knight that I had to like pay $250 to get him to join me.
But, yeah. Oh, well, yeah, yeah, I can't.
But like the rogue just kind of showed up out of nowhere. He was like, hi, I'm joining you now. I was like, okay, cool.
Oh, nice. Well, I got a pretty far way into the game and I had not seen that. So I don't know. Maybe I need to play it more thoroughly.
I got you. Yeah.
Okay. Anyways. So yeah, like you can play characters such as those two starting characters. The first thing I did, like, so basically you start the game and you select your character, of course, from the two. And then two doors open up. One is to, I guess, tournament mode, and the other one is to the actual game. Well, because they didn't really say anything about, you know, which door is which, and, like, they didn't really give any explanations in the game at that point, at the character select screen, I just went in the left door, and I was like, what is this?
I did the same thing, too.
Yeah, I fought a few enemies, and then the game just didn't end, and I was like, what even is, like, I was so confused. I'm so confused, actually, as to what that even is. I guess you're supposed to have a second player in there or something like that, but they let you access it as a single player and they just soft lock you?
Yep.
That's what they do.
That's exactly it. Yep.
That's great. Let's forget about that part of the game. Don't walk in the left door, folks. Walk in the right door, and then you get a nice little tutorial that explains all the controls to you, which is actually pretty nice because it's not just a jump and slash affair. You want to
know what else is pretty nice?
What's nice?
The fact that Studa just subbed for 9 months.
In a row?
Fucking yeah!
No, because he depends on me reminding him to come sub, so no, not in a row. That bitch. That's
funny. I have a new sound clip for when people subscribe.
Ah.
Yes, it's of Purnell going, fucking yeah!
What? That's great. I need that for my channel.
Yeah!
I don't have any sub sounds on my channel.
When did you record that?
We were recording the whole time, Purnell.
Well, you know,
I don't know. This is from a while ago that this clip was on. But it's just you going, fucking yeah.
Sold.
So when people subscribe, I just go,
fucking yeah.
There we go.
Nice. Fucking yeah.
That's great.
Now you'll have to listen to the episode to hear what I'm actually playing.
I honestly will have to do that because I want to friggin' know. I need to know. I must know, Joe. I must know. Because if I don't, well, I'll be sad. And we don't want that sale clip.
Anyway, Chris, Thy Sword.
Yeah. Yeah, you start the game, and it's got, like, a variety of moves that you can do. You not only have a regular slash, which is the R shoulder button, which I actually did not know, and so when I was trapped by myself in the left room, I just kept pushing square, which is the basically a twirly sword attack that's, like, super powerful, but it's extremely hard to pull off. Because you end up twirling usually past the enemy, and they get in a hit. which is kind of how that works. And I thought that was the only thing I could do. So not only did I defeat all those enemies, I did so with only the twirly sword attack, because I didn't even think about the regular sword attack. And it has like a special move where if you hold down the thing, you can get a screen clearing, like lightning blast that'll take everybody out, but only once. And yeah, you know, cool stuff like that. And then you start the adventure, which is basically selecting a bunch of levels from a world map. You basically, like, you know, you start off on one level, and as you proceed in the game, you can branch off and do, like, you know, choose from two different levels, and then, you know, any level that you hadn't cleared yet, you can always go back and clear it, you know. The whole goal being, of course, getting 5 jewels from 5 boss monsters. In order to win, I don't know. There's a story, I'm sure. But
Cole, so you found the story in Reed. Do you know the story in thy sword?
No, not actually. It's very, very vague, and it doesn't give you a lot of detail. And what is there? This is one of my gripes with the game. But what is there is like presented in this really horrific font, and it's almost impossible to read.
Yeah,
I was like,
bad. They got some, well, you know, the whole graphic style of this game is they're trying to look like a Commodore 64 or, you know, the like equivalent old school computer game. All the way down to the soundtrack, by the way, which is very, very Commodore 64. Like, I'm willing to bet it's authentic. You know, just the big synthy sounds and things like that. It's actually quite nice. And yeah, your characters are like, you know, 12 pixels tall, kind of, you know, little guys that, you know, I'm always surprised by how well they can make enemies look with like so few pixels, like enough that you can count them on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how, you know, that's how this whole thing is presented. And yeah, like basically the levels are, you go through a type of stage, which again is randomly generated or procedurally generated, whatever. It is, you know, different every time. And you go through several of them by going through doors, and the doors open only once you've destroyed all of the enemies on the stage. And so you got to do your little platforming stuff and, you know, get to each of the enemies. There are not only enemies, there are also little other things, such as there's occasionally a treasure chest in every stage, in which is great treasure, but you have to shoot down or jump up and stab down a crow that is, you know, quickly flying away from the scene that has a key in its, I know, the freaking crow. And if you miss it, then, well, whatever, you miss it and just move on. But if you do get it, then you get, you know, incredible riches, as I said. And, yeah, the enemies are pretty cool. They range from, you know, your little guys, your zombies, and slime skeletons with wooden swords and guys like that. I say they're wooden swords because they look brown. But, yeah, and
the ones,
you know,
have spears.
Oh, yeah, there's some with spears, yeah. But yeah, like, you graduate into the actual boss monsters, which are actually really impressive. Like, they're, you know, about 10 times the size of your hero, and even though they have predictable patterns, like, they're really well done. Like, it's actually real challenging to fight them, but it doesn't feel impossible at any point, which is unusual for a roguelike, to be honest. Because usually with roguelikes, you know, you get to the boss and you have to have like the right loadout or whatever, or else, you know, you just can't win. Whereas in this game, I defeated the dragon boss, which is the 3rd out of 5, and I did it with my default loadout because I didn't get any better weapons or items at all. Which leads me to the next point. Once you defeat all of the once you beat all the stages and defeat the monster, if there is one, some of the stages don't have a monster, you just move on. You get to a special like section where it's basically like a shop section where you can purchase potions, which you might need like a healing potion or something because your life does not restore between stages, which isn't a problem in the amateur mode. There's three difficulty modes. One of them gives you infinite lives. You just have to start all the stages over if you die. But if you have like one heart left and you, or one hit left or whatever, and you know you die in the first stage, then you you start off with your full health and stuff. So that's really nice. It's nice and forgiving, infinite lives, and you you know get restored if you have to start over, all the way up to hard mode, which is a single life for the entire game. You have to beat the whole thing in one sitting.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, good luck. But I mean, that's the way classic roguelikes are. So, you know, that's for your hardcore fans of the genre, that's the only way to do. So yeah, you get this shop where you can like buy new weapons if you gathered enough treasure in the actual stage, to afford it, which, you know, enemies can drop, like one coin if you defeat them the normal way, but they might drop two or three, even three coins if you decapitate them with your twirly sword attack. See, there's an incentive to use it. It's powerful and it makes enemies drop more coins. But, yeah, once you get to that shop section, there's also a guy who will offer to play blackjack with you. It goes by a different name in this game, but it's absolutely just standard blackjack. And if you don't know anything about blackjack, just know that you're guaranteed not to ever win.
I can win. I won so much that it told me it wouldn't let me play anymore because I was robbing his money.
Really? Because yeah. I won hilarious. Twice. I won twice out of like 90 times. How do you win a game that is like...
To be fair, I learned to play blackjack when I was 5.
So did I. So, but I like it's in the luck of the draw of the cards. Like, you mm-hmm. know, you get like 12 and then you are like, well, I better say hit me, and then you get 22 and you lose. Like no. That happens.
No. Nope.
If you're not lucky.
You just gotta be good. You just gotta be good.
Sure.
You insist.
But no, like seriously, I say it jokingly, but I actually had a lot of luck and it wouldn't let me play blackjack anymore.
That's really funny.
Because I was taking all the money. But well. there's other things that you could do in the shop too. There's not just a shop for buying weapons, but you can buy like amulets and health potions, and then
exactly,
sometimes they pop up with characters that you can add to unlock as well. So
okay, so I just haven't run across a character yet then.
Yeah. I think he's pretty random, but I also want to say fuck you because I'm stuck on the dragon. I don't think I'll ever beat that dragon.
Yeah, I beat the dragon with all of the default loadout because it was actually the first one I did. I skipped all the other bosses because I was like, I want to see, you know, how far I can get just like not going to these little caves where, you know, there are monster bosses mm-hmm. and just like going through all the big stages. And sure enough, I did that and then ran into the dragon.
See, and, the bosses were the achievements, and so that's why I was more inclined to go toward them, especially because there's a checkpoint there, and so, like, you can just keep pounding away at it and pounding away at it.
Yeah.
And then, like, you get the gems after beating the bosses, and I'm like, fuck that, let's go. I need those gems. I don't know why, but here I am.
Well, the first one is often that little cave where you have to defeat the big spider.
And it's super easy.
Yeah, the spider is super easy, so, you know, but that's okay. Because, like I said, that's a nice, refreshing change for a roguelike.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I beat the dragon. It's
did
just
you
I can't
only
beat a.
Play as the barbarian?
No, I did not. I played one time as the barbarian and went straight to Valkyrie because I cannot stand.
She gets the Valkyrie gets the bow, and I don't, unless you buy it for the barbarian, I don't think you get one.
Yeah, but the bow wasn't very useful against the dragon. I would not recommend relying on that.
I would go up to like the second tier, and while it was doing the flame shooties, then I would just pelt it and get 10 extra hits on it, and then I would go with the rest. But then it would get me anyway because I'd do something dumb at the last minute, and I'd be like, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, one thing, I guess, is that it does broadcast its intentions every time.
Yeah.
So I know exactly when it's going to like do the thing where it flies down and shoots the flames on either side of the screen.
Yeah.
Or if it's going to like tail whip me instead of shooting flames. So
yeah,
I kind of use that. And yeah, I just kept pounding away at it.
Cole and Jordan, of course, once it got the achievements.
Oh, they actually. Oh, go ahead.
Let me see. I was actually going to say, hold on and I'll check.
Oh, no, I already there's they actually are kind of hard. You have one for which is odd for a Rattalike game, of course, but so is the price tag. There is actually one for clearing the entire game, so you can't get all of them unless you beat the game once, which you know, given a game like this is not the easiest thing in the world. And then there's one for each of the bosses. There's some like random ones like dying by explosion because there's exploding barrels, of course.
And that's one an of those easy one to get.
Or like shooting an enemy out of the air. Yeah. Oh, I guess I did kill the dragon yesterday.
Oh, did you? Good.
Yeah, I have the achievement, so I must have done it and like forgot because I was so traumatized.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that's the thing is when you start over, you got to do it all again.
Medicaid.
No, because I'm playing it on bitch mode.
Oh.
I mean, I'm not stupid. Come on.
No, I've been playing it on amateur mode. I'm not good at roguelikes. I just enjoy them.
I am good at them, and I was still like, no.
I'm just not good at blackjack. That's all. I don't know. That's what I was going to say is because
I don't know how you were affording shit if you were losing blackjack.
No, that's what I'm saying. I've played this game for hours, and I have never bought anything in this game.
Yeah.
I have yet to purchase a single thing. Blackjack is
the
only
reason I could buy the shit I have.
Yeah, exactly. Every single time I would get to the blackjack guy, which again, dozens of times, I would play blackjack and lose everything and then just move on and you know, beat it anyway. So I guess it's nice. You don't have to rely on equipment upgrades to win because, you know, enemies go down in a few hits. They're easy enough to dodge if you're careful and, you know, like you just kind of have to. It's not one of those. You just
gotta learn the patterns.
Yeah. And I mean, there are bosses that are like invincible until a certain moment, and I hate those kind of enemies. But they do exist, and they are in this game too.
Of the 16 achievements, I'm missing 5.
Nice. So, I don't know how many I'm missing. That's too
bad. But I mean, for Jordan saying how hard are they, it kind of just depends on how good you are at this kind of game, because it does legitimately take a little skill, whereas a lot of Rattalica games, you're like, whatever, if I stand here and hold a button long enough, I'm going to get the achievement. But
one thing about it is that the controls are extremely tight, so you can get really good at this game. Gives you every opportunity to, really.
Yeah. Like, if you set it to easy and... You know, even if you suck miserably, which is what my problem with it, I'm not doing well at all. I die a ton, but it doesn't fucking matter because it just starts me over at that day anyway.
Yeah.
And then eventually I get through it or die trying. But the plus side is if you die, because it's procedurally generated, even if you die and you're playing on amateur and you start over that level over,
it's now different.
It's different. And so if you were having trouble with a certain layout, just fucking die and do it again. And then you're going to get a different layout.
Eventually you'll roll one that you can work with.
I had one happen like that the other day. I was like, I just can't make this work. And then all of a sudden I was like, never mind, I'm fine.
Ah, yeah.
Well, so between the two of you, $10, I need a verdict.
I think it's extremely good for what it is. It is a... It's a roguelike that's both forgiving and difficult, and I like that. It's a lost art in the genre, to be honest. I think a lot of them rely too much on difficulty, or they're just too easy all around. This one, and, you know, even though, like, you know, I tend to appreciate roguelites for the fact that they, you know, you can build your loadout and, like, have this nice kick-ass, like, setup. This game, I'm actually fine with it not being that way because you can beat the game with all of your default equipment if you have the patience and a little bit of skill and are just extremely unlucky at blackjack. I kind of curse the fact that the gambling game is blackjack because that is the most, like, out of gambling games for me, that's the one I have the least amount of luck in video games. And, you know, I played in Dragon Quests and things like that too. But you know, it's whatever. That's just my own little thing that this is a quality game. I think it's worth $10.
Yeah, I'm down with it. I'm good with the price. I think it plays. I was really surprised at how well it played. I was also surprised at how interested I was in going on. Even after I would beat a stage, pop a few achievements, I'd be like, no, I'm cool, keep going until I get it. I wasn't put off by the fact that, hey, it's a Rattalica and I can knock it out and can't knock it out in an hour. I was like, no, I'm here for it.
Even though it's the price of two Radalikas.
Yeah.
Which I'm fine with.
You know, something to take into consideration if you've got a tight budget. You want to know what it
is also equivalent to the price of? It's equivalent to the price of a tier two sub on Twitch.
Oh, wow.
Which Root Beer Is My Jam just subbed to us for the 12th month. A tier two sub, Pernell. What do you think of that?
Fucking yeah. That's excellent.
Oh my
Splendid.
God.
That's quite superb.
How that is lovely. Not the reply that was queued up.
I like that real Pernell is here for you to ask, and you're still like asking the sample.
I'm still playing the sound clip too, because Pernell just he missed the joke. Missed it. Son of a bitch, better. Pernell, you missed it.
That just makes it better.
Fucking yeah.
Splendid.
Superb.
Oh my lord. All right, well, that is it for this episode. It has been another long one. Thanks everyone for being here. Pernell, Chris, Cole, thank all of y'alls. Another thanks to Tim for coming here doing his reviews, and to George for coming on to lead off the show and do his review. Music, 1UPS just put out a B-sides collection, so we're gonna play some 1UPS, and yeah, that's it for this episode. Does anyone have any final words to end it?
I'm about to get myself a nice 3-up moon of sleep, because I'm bush quailed over here. Tired. Eat a sandwich.
Bush quailed?
I'm bush quailed.
Like bush quail 92?
Yes. Literally, yes, actually. So, fun fact. I'm not sure this is even for the end or not, but so that was an episode of Tiny Toons years ago, where Plucky was, he accidentally ended up in like a huge party with like a bunch of movie stars and such, and he wasn't supposed to be there. And when he was busted, he's like, who are you? What are you doing? And he's looking around, he's like, and he sees like an old like magazine cover. Well, I guess technically wasn't old back then. It was actually up to date. He goes, I'm an endangered species. Don't let me out. Don't kick me. I'm an endangered species. Like, what are you? Like, I'm the bush quail. And everyone starts first, like, did you say a day just so all this time grown ass man many years after, like, bush quails. It came from that, which technically came from what you said, so it's still true.